I dream that there are teeth growing all over me, everywhere on me and in me, like cysts or bone spurs. They're loose, but I can't remove them because I have no hands.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Something Rotten. This is our little weirdo indie mini-season where last time we played a game called Iron Lung, made into a movie soon by Markiplier. And this time, we played a little game called Anatomy. My name is Jacob Geller. I'm joined by my co-host, as always, Blake Hester, who I think is more mad at me for this episode than any episode we have ever recorded for this show before.
Two notes, Jacob Geller. One, in the long-running scorecard between Something Rotten and Jeff Keighley, we're taking 1 point because we actually did play indies in our indie season, and they nominated mostly not
that is true
in their indie awards category. Second, yeah, man, what the fuck is your problem, dude? Like, last season, this season, the show is a burden. I gotta play so much fucking scary shit these days.
Blake has made me promise no more horror games for several seasons at least.
If I may just hog this time for just one more second, I'd like to point out my notes to Jacob as I was playing Anatomy was, hey, what's going on here? And then immediately all caps, fuck you. So that's how I handled this game.
That is correct. But it's not just Blake and I. We are also joined by a writer, freelancer, just kind of like person about town, Autumn Wright. Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Thank you for coming on Something Rotten.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
I feel like right now, I hope you're enjoying having a review out of a movie. Blake, wait, a movie that you saw last night.
Oh, Autumn, did you review that?
So in the past, Autumn reviewed The Boy and the Heron, Miyazaki's new film that Blake has seen, and Autumn, I'm sure you have seen, and I have not because I live in North Carolina and they're not playing it anywhere. What do you have coming up that'll be out in the present of this podcast's release?
Well, relevant to that, I have an interview out at Pace this week with Joe Hisaishi.
Oh, shit.
Who's the composer for Boy and the Heron and every other music.
Genuinely, like, one of my favorite music people, period. I listen to Joe Hisaishi most days of the week, probably.
That's amazing.
Yeah, really weird to be on a Zoom call with him, gotta say.
Yeah, I went and saw it last night, and I did my best to replicate the experience of the film's premiere. I had not seen any trailer. I had only seen the posters for this movie. A trip, not knowing what you're in store for. The opening 2 minutes, Jacob, if I may, tell you one thing about the opening 2 minutes. They go hard on an unbelievable scale. Like, we don't have numbers to talk about how hard the animation is in literally just the opening
Can't
two
wait.
Minutes. It's incredible.
But Autumn, we have not asked you here to talk about the King Among Men, Hayao Miyazaki. Instead, here's a question that I guess we should have asked before asking you on this podcast, which is, how are you with horror?
Yeah, Blake did not ask that.
Like, I told you, but Blake, I said check with Autumn. This is a very scary
okay
game.
Hold on, in my defense, I didn't say, hi Autumn, you are required to play this game. I said, would you like to play this game and come talk to us? Like, you had the chance to say no.
Yeah, no, I am a crybaby that was afraid of the dark. But I think critics of all sorts, I've noticed, just really like horror or like talking about horror.
Yeah.
There's something about the genre for like every medium, I think, that really pulls at for critics. So I'm surrounded by people that have those brainworms. And I'm like familiar with Kitty Horish's stuff, probably from your videos more than anything. And this game in particular was like pretty big in the critical conscience in like 2016. So it's been on my periphery, but if you ask me, like, what is a scary game, it would probably be, like, Alan Wake 2, or, like, something that this game actually made me think a lot of was, like, the Echoes of the Eye DLC.
Oh, yeah.
For
that's
Outer Wilds.
That's a great connection.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I want to get into that more, but first, I do... Blake, without talking about the content of the game, can you just walk me through your experience of playing this? Maybe, you know, in between when I was getting the messages telling me to go fuck myself and what was wrong with me and et cetera.
For sure. So it was funny. Like, I definitely I rewatched your video, which, Jacob, did you know that video came out 4 years ago?
It's mess. I mean, I do know because I watch it and there are like a million production things that make me want to tear my hair out.
Can I send a message back through space-time and say, Jacob, get a better mic?
I know.
Your old mic was terrible. But I remember nothing about it. Like, when I heard the first quote in the game, I was like, oh, I vaguely remember this. But, like, I basically went in as blind as possible. And, you know, mild spoilies for what the game is. It preys on just, like, the simplest fear of someone who grew up in a house and that's being in that house with the lights off. And it's like, I've never really thought deeply about this shit, but I genuinely think that's probably the scariest thing outside of, like, Cthulhu being real and showing the hell up. It's just, like, you're in a home alone. And this game is, like, I mean, because it's dark and it's hard to see, I spent the whole game thinking a jump scare was going to happen. And then when I had the slow realization that tension is never going to be released, like, it was, we just played Silent Hill 2, which has cutscenes, the tension is relieved eventually. This game, the only release of tension is the knowledge that you're finally done. And so it's an hour of just, like, your nerves being as heightened as possible and there being no escape from it outside of, like, giving up on it. And, am I doing a good job answering your question?
Yeah, I think that
it was. I'm trying to, like, explain the feeling of having your nerves frayed. You know, like, it was the scariest, I would say, piece of media I've ever encountered.
Yeah, so I wanna talk a little about how I first encountered this game, because it is also it sort of feels like an encounter with, like, something supernatural or, like, something sublime, just in, like, the emotions that this creates. But I first heard of it through, there might have been a very early Rock Paper Shotgun article about it, but Cool Ghosts, which was a YouTube channel that Matt Leese and, like, Quentin Smith and people used to run, did a video about Anatomy that I think Quentin, like, scripted, or he was talking or whatever. And I thought it sounded cool, and I played it, and the first time I got through, I don't even know if I got through the second playthrough, and I had to stop because I was too scared. And then, and this was kind of like the origin of one of my main takes on horror, which is that not finishing is the worst thing that you can do, because, like, I didn't finish, and then the game remained, like, alive for me. You know, it was like, I did not even get, you know, Blake, you said there's not really any closure, but it's like, at least you get to a point where the game ends and you're reminded, like, oh, this is a media experience that someone made and now it's over. But because I didn't do that, I was just kind of like, there is this thing on my computer that is so scary that I might die. And so I had to go back days later, and I played it in the middle of the day with all the lights on, and I finished it, and I was like, okay, now I get that. And since then, it has become, like, one of my favorite, I would put this game in, like, my top 10 games of all time, but it is,
You did when we did that, when you joined that Twitter trend we were doing when we were giving our info to some random chart website.
Yeah, but it's been, you know, I've played it many times since then. It's a game that I've kind of, like, if I've been with friends, I've done that dickhead thing of being like, hey, you should play this, and then I can watch you be scared. But it's, yeah, it's just kind of, like, remained in there for me. Autumn, you said you were aware of kind of the critical conversation around this game, and Kitty Horror Show was a creator who we can talk about a little. But this was, playing it for the show was your first time through?
Yeah, I, similar to Blake, was anticipating something the whole time.
Yeah. And that's the worst fucking part. Is that something literally will not come for you?
I think in, like, I had a similar feeling to, like, the not wanting to open the game on your desktop. For me, that was going through the house being like, I hope this door does not open.
Right.
I would prefer it if this is not the right door and I just don't have to find out what is next.
So for both of you, did you like it? Like when you were done, were you like, I'm glad I played that?
I have a note that says, I can't say I enjoyed myself. But in the like 5 days since, I've like thought a lot about it. I like have written a lot more beneath my notes about it. I'm just like, yeah, I don't know another game that does this quite like this does.
Yeah, I 2,000,000,000% loved it, Jacob. You struck out. I mean, still fuck you. We are business partners only. Friendship ended with Anatomy. but I loved it. I mean, coming off Silent Hill 2 especially, which, like, even compared to a lot of... compared to, like, most horror games coming out today, like Silent Hill 2 20 years ago, like, really understood being a video game and being scary. But I think Anatomy just takes it to a whole nother level. Like, there's no universe where this Anatomy, I think, works as a TV show or a movie. Maybe as a book could be kind of interesting. But it's, like, the act of playing it is what is so scary. And the, like, meta... we'll talk about the meta opening and closing this game does. That is like, you can't do that with something you're streaming on Netflix, you know? I'm really fascinated by how well Kitty Horror Show just like knows video games and understands horror within video games. That like, I loved it. I fucking adore it. It goes so hard.
For such a simple, like, for how largely non-interactive this game is, there are so many like very specifically gamey things that are so clever in it. I do want to note before we talk about this, I was just looking at the at Kitty Horror Show's Wikipedia page. There is one paragraph where previous Something Rotten guest Julie Muncy, previous Something Rotten guest Suriel Vasquez, and me are all quoted talking about the game, which is like a pretty good batting effort.
Yeah, I mean, the gamey... to circle back, one last thought. Also, I saw that quote of yours, Jacob, and that was one of your pieces for Game Informer. Never forget your roots, brother.
That's right.
the gaminess of it is so interesting because, you know, it's like a low-poly, very... I don't know if micro indie is the right word, but indie-ass indie game. And a lot of times those games are rough around the edges. And I don't think this game particularly is, aside from its like aesthetic. But it plays with making you think it's like glitching out. And then when you realize like, oh no, it's just going House of Leaves on me. And these are not glitches. And Kitty Horror Show has created a way to make the idea of a video game having bugs in it scary. It's like, it's great. Shouts out, friend of the show, Kitty Horror Show.
I feel like we made it a pretty good length into the podcast without mentioning House of Leaves.
That's about all it takes. It's that and I will also talk about the Haunting of Hill House, which is not only an inspiration but actually like name dropped in the readme. Kitty Horror Show says, like, you know, shout out to Shirley Jackson or whatever, which is awesome. So Kitty Horror Show as a creator has been doing this for a while. She's just as like a Patreon. I've been like a Patreon supporter for a while. But it's interesting that it's like she's kind of made, you know, if you look at her Wikipedia, it's like there's a game called Kirza, which I actually haven't played. And then Anatomy, and then she's been making these packs called, like, Haunted Cities for the past, you know, like, 7-8 years at this point. And has this fucking lock on, like, what it is that she's doing in a way that I just find, like, really engaging as a player, being able to, like, interact with someone's whole body of work. And just see, like, okay, you're playing with different themes, but, like, there's such an art style here that is really cool to see. And I think it's fun that you can play all of her games and it doesn't take that long. And all of them are kind of, like, interesting and working with similar themes. But let's talk about what Anatomy actually is, like, as a game. Because the description of it is kind of just a game where you walk around a house and you pick up cassette tapes and you put them in a tape player. And that's, like, mechanically, that's the whole game.
But what if that house and those cassettes fucking hated you more than anything on
Like, did you know it was going to be just a game where you walked around and picked up cassette tapes?
Jacob, I didn't know fucking anything about this game. I'm telling you. I watched your video 4 years ago and remembered not a single goddamn thing. That was the only interaction I've ever had with this game. Like, no. I had no clue. I probably spent 20 minutes when I booted the game up trying to figure out what the hell I was supposed to do before I found the first cassette tape.
One of my notes is, oh man, I forget just how dark this game is. That it is really right on the edge of completely unplayably dark. That it's like, your field of vision or your, like, the light in front of you goes, like, maybe a foot and a half in, like, dark hallways, and there's so much navigation that is, like, literally just hugging a wall because you cannot see, like, 3 feet in front of you.
Well, it's got, like, Tomb Raider 1 aesthetic, where it's, like, the gate, it almost looks like the world is building itself in front of you because the draw distance is so low.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, the basement and the garage, where that garage, I think, could fit 45 cars.
Yeah.
walking to the middle of those rooms is like, oh, I'm never finding my way out of this. I'm stuck here forever.
Yeah, my very first note is just can't see shit.
Yep. Yeah. To the extent that, like, if you're playing this on, like, a laptop or something, you can actually make this unplayable for yourself by, like, the wrong monitor choice if you just, like, have something that can kick out enough light. So the first thing that you do in this game is you walk in a straight line through the house, turn into the kitchen. There's a cassette player and a cassette tape on the table. You pick up the tape, put it in the player, and it's this very kind of, I don't even know how to describe the sound, just kind of like a somewhat degraded academic lecture on the idea of the house. You know, in the history of the modern civilized human being, it's difficult to overstate the importance of the house is, like, its first line, which I think of as very iconic. And then when it's done, there's just text at the bottom that says, the next tape is in the dining room or in a bedroom or in a bathroom. And for your whole first run through, you just go and you pick it up and you listen to the tape and then you go find the next one.
I think this quote is, I mean, it's one of the best lines in the game, but, like, had y'all ever considered the house as, like, a living organism before this moment? I know that's, like, sounds like a goofy question, but that's kind of the thesis of this game. Had you ever, like, looked at a living space in the way that this game kind of is, like, asking you to?
I don't think quite in the way this is going on, but, like, one thing that was, like, really on my mind that it's, like, a couple weeks ago, I read A Closed and Common Orbit by Becky Chambers, who's this feminist sci-fi author. And that book is about ship AIs getting human bodies, basically. And so it's about them being like, what do I do with this? What do I do with two eyes? I'm used to having cameras in the corners of rooms. And so, like, that was really on my mind thinking about this as the house was coming alive.
I think one of the reasons that this game is so scary is, like, my answer is, like, no, but yes. You know, in that, like, I had never been, like, the house is alive. I had certainly never been kind of, like, the living room is the heart and the bedroom is the head or whatever in the way that this narration kind of does. But as I think I said in that video that I made, like, 4 years ago, you know, like, an experience that I had that I think every kid had, if you had stairs in your house, was, like, it was, you know, it's like, oh, you're going to bed and you have to turn off all the lights downstairs. And as soon as you do that, your house becomes, like, unsafe. And you have to, like, run as fast as you can up the stairs because in the dark, just, like, a bad thing might happen. And I really had that. I've talked many times on this podcast about how I was and am still pretty just scared of the dark. And so, like, having that kind of, like, oh, maybe that is what I was scared of this whole time is, like, one of the reasons that I feel like this game is just able to, like, mainline into the horror centers of my brain is kind of that like realization of like, maybe this was present the whole time, you know, that like that's why I was so freaked out by like being in the dark in my own
house. There's something I've thought about a lot, and this game, like, I feel like really reminded me of, is whenever I move into a new place, and especially when I like will go back to my hometown, I'll always try to drive past like my old childhood home and see how it's been like redone by its current owners. Or like, I just moved into an apartment, which is like a fairly old building compared to where I've lived previously. I always am like, I wish I could just know all the people that lived here and everything that happened. And there's always like, when I drive past my old house, or like I'll look up Zillow and be like, what's it kind of look like these days? I'll be like, why the fuck would they paint it? Why would they get rid of our old microwave that barely worked? I'll get like kind of pissed off because like, don't they know what happened in the house? Like, that microwave had fucking history. I made so much Chef Boyardee in that shit. But I feel like this game kind of like gets at that a little bit, you know, because it's like, it's very much a game about a house in disrepair, and it's almost like the house is having the anger I'm having. Like, we made so much shit in here, why would you fucking leave me to kind of rot? And I just kept thinking, especially because I played this like literally the day after I moved into my apartment. And I was like, who was in here before me? Would they be mad about where I decided to hang my pictures or put our couch in the shit?
You know, it's an interesting question, Blake. I was actually thinking about you and your new apartment, because like, yeah. I feel like part of this game's horror is kind of a specifically suburban or rural horror, in that like, it is very much about a house and not about like an apartment, and kind of like part of it is that kind of isolation and the idea that like it could have been there without anyone being in it, which is not really something that I associate with New York. You know, it feels like their cities are just kind of like so dense and so constantly moving that like I don't know if I would be scared in the same way being in like a dark apartment in a city versus being in like a dark house in kind of a suburb.
But that's so weird, right? Like, I agree with you. Like, the worst idea I can think of for a horror movie is like a haunted apartment. It's like, I don't own this place. I'll just move out. Who cares? It costs me a few extra $100. Whatever. I'm out. See you later. I'll break my lease. But like, when I think about a house in the suburbs that is empty, and I just think about standing in it alone, like, there's something about it that is so inherently creepy. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, you know how sometimes you're at home and nothing is happening? You're not watching a horror movie, but like, it kind of dawns on you that you're in a large space by yourself, and all of a sudden you're scared of the house where all your belongings and loved ones have inhabited. That, like, yeah, I agree with you. And this house, the way it flips the script is like, not only is the idea of a dark, empty house scary, it adds an added layer of like, this house is sentient and it's mad at you.
Yeah.
And if your house turns on you, you in your video, Jacob, you talk about black mold, or like as they write in Leviticus, right? Leviticus?
Yeah. Or they talk about the house getting leprosy, but yeah, we can basically intuit that it is mold.
Yeah. Like, that's a house. You can see that as a house being angry at you. And you know, when you got to fumigate your house or whatever, it's like, there's nothing worse than thinking your walls can turn on you.
Yeah.
And Kitty Horseshoe is like, yeah, what if that was the whole pitch?
And I think so. That is in the first run of the game, because you do have to play through the game many times. That is, I think, the first kind of stroke of genius here, is that when you get these cassette tapes, it's not talking about the place you just were. It is talking about the place that you are going to have to go. And so you get,
oh, sure,
you get a cassette tape, and it talks about like, here's this really scary idea of what a bedroom could represent in a house. And then after that tape is done, it says, there is a tape in a bedroom. And it's like, great, now my head is filled with these ideas and I have to like walk up there.
Right. However, don't skip over the brilliant piece of the brilliant curveball with that bedroom, where you play a tape and the narrator is like, most people scared shitless of their basements. Text pops up. They say it more eloquently than most people scared shitless of their basements, but you understand. Text pops up, go to the basement. You are terrified. And you go get the tape down there. You come up, you put it in, and then like just the best well-timed joke possible. It goes, but basements aren't for real scary. You ever heard of bedrooms?
Yeah.
And then it goes on to deliver this thesis about how bedrooms are scary. And if you've ever seen Paranormal Activity 1, and you remember the girl standing over her husband watching him for 6 hours. This is basically what this text is making you think of, or this narration is making you think of, the fact someone could watch over you while you sleep.
That is, for me, that's the single scariest like line of dialogue absent of anything, just like the ideology of the game is so, the anyone could stand over you watching you while you're asleep and you don't know it, and it's kind of up to your bedroom to make sure that doesn't happen or happens.
So Autumn, I want to kick it to you after this to hear your thoughts on this, because I think the scary bedroom is so fascinating. But like, there are two, I don't think they're required, but there are two like recordings you can find and play that I think were the scariest moments of the game for me. But the bedroom cassette was when I stopped thinking like, oh, this is going to be like some Twitch horror where something's going to pop out, Five Nights at Freddy's me. And I was like, oh, this game is going to be truly scary. This game's going to be fucked up scary. And then I had to keep playing it because, you know, it's my fucking job at this point. Autumn, this moment hit you at all?
Yeah, the kind of fake out on the basement, so good. The exact writing there is just artful. Like, there's a lot. I have the transcript up there. It's like, while poets and psychoanalysts no doubt dread the thought of a dark basement, in truth it is the bedroom, yeah, the waking mind, the place of dreams, yeah, which is actually the most frightening of all. Like, you can't beat that.
Yeah.
And I think my idea of this game as a queer person that grew up in the suburbs, mm-hmm, is that you don't get this game if you think about, oh, what if this place that I think is safe is actually not, yeah, safe? I think this is a game that understands that these places have not been safe. And like, the particular claustrophobia I get playing the game is that like, we in the suburbs, if you're a kid, you're kind of stuck in your house.
Sure.
You can't go out somewhere. Like, I now live in Brooklyn, and it's really weird how close a lot of people are to me.
Yeah.
Just on the other side of my apartment walls.
Yeah.
But like, I can also just leave here and I can get really far just on my feet. And you can't do that in suburbs. There's like that sense of entrapment. Even though there's wide open space, if you go outside, like, you can't, you're not like actually permitted to, yeah, move through that space.
I had no clue you were in Brooklyn. Wave out your window. I'm in Queens. Can you see me right now?
I think it's a great point. And I also think it's one of the, as this game goes on and we'll talk about, there is this kind of like thing that it's doing with its narrative where it is making you feel like a scared person in the house, but it is also like making you feel like, or at least understand the house, you know. And it's like, by the end, the house is basically the sympathetic character, even though it's like spent the past hour scaring the shit out of you. And I think that idea of kind of like, what does it mean to be trapped here? Is like, first you're thinking about like, that's me. That's a person who lives in a house. And by the end, you're thinking like, no, the house is trapped here. And like, all of this haunting is coming from like its ability to not leave and its kind of like lack of agency in what happens to it, which I think is like a really interesting reading.
It also like helps justify a design decision. There are only two doors in the entire house that don't give you the prompt that you can interact with them. And they're the front and back door, which on the one hand is just like, the game doesn't exist out there. It takes place in the house. But like, it does like narratively fit into the like, there's no option to leave. You can't go outside and stand on the front porch and be like, okay, cool. No, nothing's going to scare me out here. Like you might in like, I guess Gone Home starts on the porch. The game doesn't happen, yeah, out there. There's no like, there's no safety from it, which I think is really interesting hearing you talk about like the entrapment of the houses. Is like, the game doesn't even give you an option of like a safe zone outside of its walls.
There is of course very good subtle work that the game is doing. I love that you can hear doors unlock in the house. Is like a particularly excellent thing where it says, you know, there's a tape in an upstairs bedroom. You can actually hear like a that's like the little lock unlocking on one of the bedroom doors. And then
I don't think I noticed that. That's cool.
There's also like a sense of distance to the sound. So like, if you start to walk away from the tape recorder, it gets quieter.
Yeah.
And it's louder when the doors closer to you open also, which becomes, for me at least, like, my back was turned to the basement door at a point when it unlocks.
Yeah.
And that was just like, ah.
Yeah, did, so.
I didn't even notice.
Who did that?
When the tape was playing, did y'all just kind of stand and look at the table, or did you like explore?
Well, I have to make the trailer for this season, so I had OBS running, and I was kind of framing, actually, shots of the recorder, so I was facing the recorder every time they were playing, being like, does it look good in this lower third?
Yeah, I was just hanging around, like, I had started to wander, but, like, it got quiet to a point where I didn't want to go further, and then there's also the matter of it not having any sort of captioning, really,
yeah.
Which I was like, that's a weird choice, but it does become very relevant to, like, how you experience it later.
I was just going to bring this up, actually, which is, like, it is an accessibility concern, and it sucks if there's someone who, like, can't enjoy this game because they need subtitles on it or whatever, but, like, it is important to the game that it is hard to understand these tapes, and it gets harder, you know, because as we get into the next couple run-throughs, things degrade to the point where they are, like, basically inaudible.
Yeah, I mean, I see what y'all are saying. I think there's, like, a pretty easy way you can just do that in subtitles where you just kind of, like, garble up letters. Because it, like, I mean, granted, like, I'm not someone who needs subtitles from an accessibility standpoint, but, like, I don't know what the last... I could barely understand the last monologue in this game. Like, will have to tell me what it said, because, like, I just couldn't understand it. I was like, well, this seems very important to the game, and it's, like, messaging, and just, like, the lack of subtitles. I was like, well, it's gone. I don't know what the fuck. I missed all that.
When I was doing research on this after playing it, I actually found, through a Tumblr post, someone shared a Google Doc of a transcript for the whole thing
that
they put together,
cool.
And they do a very House of Leavesy thing where they're just, like, fucking around with the font sizes and bolds and italics and key smashes and stuff to make, like, an actual transcript that accompanies everything. And it even borrows some of what the text in the game does when it starts to break, which is, like, the letters going off the screen and everything.
That's really cool.
Yeah, this is actually, it's one of the first things that comes up if you Google the game as, like, Anatomy Kitty Horror Show transcript on the Tumblr by Where Is My Wizard Hat? Shout out to them.
We'll drop that in the episode description for people if they want to check that out.
So the first run through of the game ends with you know, what would be, I think, a fairly neat, clever ending, which is you know, you get the basement fake out. It says, nope, actually the scariest place is in the bedroom, waking mind. You go up there into the master bedroom, pick up a tape, and you turn around and the door is gone, and replaced is just a tape player set on the wall, and you listen to the last thing where it says that the bedroom is not a mind, or it could be a mind, but it is also a mouth, and we just have to hope that it doesn't close down on us. And then the game quits itself out, which is always something that I love. And it's like, if that was it, I would be like, dang, good, you know, great little story, good effective game, good job. But it's not, because you actually have to play it several more times.
Let me ask both of you, how did you discover that you needed to play it more than once?
I knew there were multiple playthroughs. When I got that first ending, I thought it was like, okay, so now I need to go mess around. Something is going to be different. And there starts to be things.
Yeah.
Like, you can turn the TV on to a blue screen, and it illuminates the living room, and it looks weird. But, like, yeah, but then, like, I had to eventually find myself back to the path as the first route.
There is a readme that comes with the game that is kind of broken into certain sections that it says, like, hey, once you beat it, you know, play it again, or whatever. And so, like, there is information in the game's files that says it, but Autumn, I, the same as you, I was kind of picturing the first time I played it, like, I'm going to have to make a different choice in order to make a different ending, you know, in kind of a, I don't know, like a Telltale way or something. But in fact, it is functionally loading up a different game. Like, it, you know, it is, there is no way you could have the same playthrough the second time, because the game kind of loads an entire different set of parameters for your second playthrough.
Yeah, it's kind of like Nier Automata, which is a little weird, but you have a repetition until you suddenly don't, but, like, you're still going through endings four or five times. I also think like it's really important the framing of this as a VHS tape when you open the game, and the point of that being like VHS tape degradation.
Yeah, that one of the most notable things immediately is in the second playthrough, there is this like this background hum that is way louder the second time, and there are kind of like lines of static that are going across the screen, but like the primary thing about the second one is it is louder, you know. And this game, we talk about it like not really having jump scares, but like it does have jump scares. They are all just kind of volume related, where like sometimes the game will just like get loud and you're not expecting it in a way that Blake, I'm almost surprised we haven't brought it up until now. I have not seen this movie. Autumn, I don't know if you've seen this movie. Skinamarink is a movie that a lot of people have told me that I should watch specifically because of how much I like this game. I know that, like, you don't really like that movie that much, but, like, do you feel the shared DNA here?
No. I mean, like, I guess in the sense that it's like, what if a house was weird? I think Skinamarink is just so Reddit-brained. It's made by a Redditor. Like, this game is so much smarter than Skinamarink, which is just like, I don't know. People really like that movie. I don't want to speak too ill against it.
Hey, well, listeners, we covered it. Autumn, have you seen Skinamarink?
No.
Okay.
If it's anything, if you were putting it in the realm of this thing, I don't want to see
it. It's like really like, what if A24 made a creepypasta movie? Like, that's kind of it.
That just sounds like A24.
Yeah, kind of. But like, here's the thing. It has a couple really incredible scares in it that I will not take away from Kyle Edward Ball, who I think just is summoned when you say the name Skinamarink. He is the Skinamarink. I noticed when we like when I tweeted like I watched Skinamarink, he liked it really quickly, and I was like, weird thing to do, dude. One thing I wanted to say really quick, going back a few minutes, I don't know if Jacob did this consciously, just knowing me so well. But I'm definitely not the kind of gamer who would ever read a readme.
Absolutely did do this consciously.
Luckily, Jacob told me, hey, there are multiple playthroughs, and said the correct thing. It's kind of like Nier Automata. And I was like, oh, hell yeah, let's fucking go. I love that weird anime game. Otherwise, I would have joined this call and been like, that was a cool little 10-minute experience we played. Neat thing.
So my take on the game scariness is I actually think this second playthrough is peak, like, I am as Jacob Geller being scared. I think that this second playthrough, even though things kind of continue to escalate in the third and then kind of the fourth, which is almost completely different. But what happens in this one is several things that I think are almost perfect as like a horror move. The tapes start breaking down. They kind of like start similarly, but won't finish, or they'll get like really garbled, or they'll kind of like cut out in the middle. And the text of where the next tape is starts breaking, where it kind of, the first one is just like off center and has a bunch of like random text in it, but it still says like there's a tape in the dining room and then whatever. But eventually it says the single scariest phrase that this game could deliver you, which is, it just says all doors are unlocked. And so suddenly you don't have a destination to go to get the tape. It's just like you have to wander the entire house to find where the next one is. And I remember like seeing that for the first time, I was just like, this is the cruelest thing you could do to me.
Jacob, what playthrough do you find the first optional cassette?
Now, is the first optional cassette just the tape player in the bedroom?
Yes, so you can find a couple, and one you play, we'll get to the second one because it's the most fucked up thing in this game, but the first one is someone, let me be real with everyone, not singing very well, pretty bad singer all things considered, singing I think it's Jesus Loves Me.
Yeah.
It really reminded me of the final scene of Gummo, if you all have seen that. I believe the little girl in that is singing Jesus Loves Me. I don't know, actually maybe it's the audio from Gummo. I don't know what it was about it, something just about that tape, which I think is in playthrough 2, that like sent a cold chill through my entire body. in a way like I can't describe. I have nothing smart to say about it, but it was like one of the two scariest moments in the game for me was discovering the Jesus Loves Me tape and just like clicking and listening to it.
Yeah, for sure. And also like you can't, well, actually, I don't know if this is the case with the Jesus Loves Me one. The second one, you can't turn off, or maybe
we'll get
I would
there.
Just like,
we'll get
I,
there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Like, it's very scary. It's,
Kitty Horror Show needs to be tried for that crime because it was fucked. I couldn't handle it.
Yeah, okay, so Autumn, when you get to this, all doors are unlocked, are you feeling the way that I am feeling, which is just, like, constant chills down my arms and whatever?
Yeah, no, I would not open the doors. I personally would stop going back in the house, stop yeah. putting the tape on. This is the thing, like I said earlier, I didn't want to open the doors. When they were not opening, because they were locked, it's like, okay, thank God, that was, like, a little bit of relief, and this just throws it all away. And like, you know that there are several rooms you have not been into yet too.
One thing we haven't talked about are the paintings on the
oh true yeah
the pictures uh-huh. on the wall. But I'm pretty where the pictures are the worst, listener, if you haven't played, the pictures are just scary.
They remind me of like diagrams of anatomy that you would find in like a fake old book from the 17th century.
Yeah, it's like the Evil Dead version of like a, you know, how to dissect a hand or something.
Have you ever had a kind of goth friend in your early 20s? This is what they usually decorated their fucking house with. But in the second playthrough, I think the master bedroom opens where the pictures are at their worst. Like, and they're a lot bigger too, I believe. Like,
oh, like
it's impossible to kind of look.
Yeah.
It starts to be impossible to look away from them because the game is like funneling towards you, like stare at these walls, like look at, like, I don't know that they really serve a narrative purpose other than what if a house had scary pictures and like that is scary. But like the master bedroom on playthrough two, when all the doors unlocked, it's like, Jesus Christ, like, where are we going?
There's a really effective one when you get to the bedroom and it says like, oh, what if the bedroom's a mouth? All the pictures are teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah.
Yeah. And so the game just suddenly becomes, you know, and then it's like basically you have to be like, am I going to go into the basement? Like, I can't find the next tape. Am I gonna look down there? You know, which is just such a terrible decision to have to make for yourself. And also there are things, Autumn, you mentioned the TV, but there are also like there are plates on the dining room table in the second playthrough. And if you click on them, they just break. And it's this very weird kind of like, what does that mean? Like, what am I doing here? And then it kind of plays into like the later narrative that the game is doing. But it's just this like weird interactable where you keep wondering, like, what part of the game is this? And ultimately, I don't think it affects anything. But for me, maybe the longest sustained scare, maybe that I've ever felt, certainly while playing a game, is something that happens in about the middle of this playthrough, which is you are picking up tapes and you're putting them in and they're like completely incomprehensible. You can't hear anything. And then there's this one that in the middle, it kind of like, it glitches from the kind of detached autonomous, or not autonomous, academic voice into a more, you know, what sounds like a woman's voice, like whispering in your ear in a, like a quality that is much more clear, than the other ones have been. And it's like, that is already so scary because it's a voice that you've never heard before. But then like what the voice is describing is someone walking up, walking into the house and walking down the hallway. And you have spent so much time in that house that you know the layout of it. And so the voice is describing, like, he's walking down the front hallway, he's upsetting things, he's knocking things off the wall, and you're in that kitchen, which is at the end of the hallway, and just, like, the fucking chills going down my body of just being like, please, please don't something walk around that corner. I will literally die if that happens.
What?
That's it.
I think that moment like really stood out to me. And I think it's like, it seems very clear that at least for first time players, like Horror Show knows what you think this game is going to be. And it's like a Five Nights at Freddy's. Something's going to pop out. Like you're constantly waiting for it. So when you uncover like of this tape, which is like very well written and like very poetic, but describing something walking down the layout of the house, you are just expecting it, like some low poly motherfucker to walk around that corner. It's going to be creepy. You're going to scream and then, you know, game over. Like any other kind of like PS1 inspired indie game that kind of comes out and blows up on Steam for a week. Like, I think it's brilliant to like, the game is so well aware of who you are and it's weaponizing it against you in such a smart way. And then like flipping the script on that, like there are, you know, no, there's no guy that walks down the fucking hallway for you. But like on top of it being terrifying, like it's a really, really genius design decision to just be like, I know you better than you know yourself and I'm going to fuck your whole shit up.
I think the tape also introduces the idea that the house is sentient. Like that is kind of the house's perspective. And starts to flesh that out. And like you start to think like, so what you start to imagine, what is the body of the house? How does the body feel that? And we get the idea of like, it's already planted the ideas like, are the windows eyes? Well, what's it like to have like 12 eyes, right? That kind of thing.
There are like two narrators in the game, right? There's the first one doing this like kind of a lecture almost about houses that gets you to think about houses. And then when you encounter the second narrator, it becomes clear, oh, the house is thinking about me too, which is like a very weird meta scary concept to be like, this is a two-way street. We're both kind of like thinking about this symbiotic relationship, but one of us is thinking about how to end the other.
Yeah, like the end of that story is the house slamming the door on this person so that they fall down the stairs,
yeah,
and just watching them die.
It is the writing is so, it's so good and it's so chilling, mm-hmm, where it's describing this person who has like ticks all over their body, and then it describes like the ticks are bursting as he falls down the stairs, and it is also this, you know, it is introducing the house, even as scary as it is, as like a sympathetic character, because it's basically having its body invaded by someone who does not respect it, you know, and it's like, it's not hard, yep, to read you know, like a metaphor of violence, of like domestic violence or something, into this, because it is like the house being invaded, the house's space not being safe anymore, and so then, you know, the house making the choice to retaliate and like knock this guy down the stairs. But it's like, it's very clear from the narration that like this person, I mean, it says like he pees on the wall, you know, but it's like, it's a very kind of like invasion of space feeling a narration.
And like, we already use those metaphors of like invasions of the body and invasions of the house, the home, and like the nation, right? Like we conflate all these metaphors all the time already, and so like it's just like starting to twist those around a little bit and like redirect them back at us, changing the point of view.
Then another horrifying thing happens, which is actually, it's easy to miss, where after the, you know, the says the knocked him down the basement, the basement door does not only unlock, it swings open. And because you're in the kitchen, you can actually see it swing open, which is like another one of those like, god damn it, that's so good, that's so scary. And then you walk down the basement stairs, and arguably another like jump scare-y thing happens, because there's just kind of a loud noise and the game shuts off. Like it feels like it almost feels like the game blue screens. Like it really feels like a glitch where the game just cuts itself off. But that's the end of playthrough two. At this point, Blake, were you excited to restart the game and keep going?
Why you ask dumb questions? No. Idiot. No, actually, there was a moment after playthrough two where I was like, maybe I'll play tomorrow, you know? Maybe I will stop. And then I forced myself. It was nighttime. I was so scared already. I was like, no, capitalize on the experience. But there was a moment where I was like, I'll wrap it up tomorrow on my lunch break when it's sunny outside. I held true. I played it at night.
Yeah, so the third playthrough starts. Notably, you don't start in the main hallway. You start in a bedroom, which is already, it's kind of like, with all the thoughts that we've been given about bedrooms, it's very weird to start there. But like the third playthrough, we didn't really talk about this on the second, but like the house really starts glitching in strange ways. And it starts on the second, but like it goes crazy on the third, where there are like these weird dark lines that are kind of like static flickering through the walls, and you'll like walk into the bathroom and the mirror will be like halfway in, halfway out of the wall. But in the third playthrough, there are just these like these pulsing, you know, they look like veins or like, you know, arteries or something that are just like breaking through the walls and kind of like strobing. And so it's just like the third playthrough, I think, is almost not as scary as the second, just because it's so clearly fucked that you're just kind of like, it's a little more obvious, but it's still terrifying. Blake, you're looking at me like I'm insane.
Yeah, because you find the fucking other optional,
yeah.
What are those things called? Tape players. Y'all ever seen people try to say this movie's dog shit? And I try to tell them they're dog shit for this take, because this movie goes hard. Y'all ever seen The Devil Inside, the found footage possession film from like 2012? Maybe?
No.
There's a scene in it, as I recall, it's been a long time. Maybe this movie's dog shit, and I just like it because I was 17 when I saw it. But it's a woman's mom is possessed, and she lives in Rome. She's like institutionalized there. And there's a scene where she goes to visit her mom, and she's like, mom, it's me. What's up? You know me. You're not going to act strange. And the mom just like unprompted starts screaming at her. Like not like yelling, not being like saying things, just like shrieking. And it's not like a scared scream. It is like an angry scream, like top of your lung, shrill anger. And I remember like that more so than the like normal scares in the movie, that like terrified me. There's something just about like screaming in agony or horror or anger, that like just complete outcry of emotion that I find horrifying. So of course this game does it, because you know nothing can be easy with anatomy. It always has to be the worst thing imaginable. There's a tape player in the I believe the master bedroom, one of the bedrooms. You play it and it is just someone, it sounds like it is recorded on a Victrola. The audio quality is so bad. Just screaming, peaking the audio left and right. I don't know the emotion there. It's probably some amount of pain and terror, maybe anger, maybe all of them. It's just like this like very visceral outpouring of human feeling. And you're conditioned, and that's like, that's terrible. Like I cannot even begin to describe, already scared of that thing, like the cold chill that went through my body and just stayed there. But you're conditioned throughout the rest of the game to let the audio clips play to completion. So you just like stand there and listen to it and endure it, most importantly, or suffer through it, whatever you want to say. Like you're not, it is not just a passive listening experience, and then it never stops.
Yep.
And it loops. And after a while you realize you've been there for a couple minutes listening to screaming, which as a human is not good for your brain. Not a joke. Just not good to listen to. It does things to you emotionally, and then it never stops, and you walk away and you can hear it down the hall, and when you have to pass by it again you'll hear it faintly coming from your right or left ear depending on where you are. And it is like, without question, I'm gonna say it right now, I'm gonna drop it, the scariest thing I've ever encountered in anything, not just a game. Like something about that one audio clip is like hands down the single scariest thing I've ever experience. It's crazy. Nothing smart to say. Head empty. Just scared. Shit's fucked.
I'll try to make one smart observation, but I think the lack of intention there gets at, it kind of lines with the themes of like thinking about this non-human body. Yeah. And like trying to read emotion into it.
I don't know who that voice is supposed to be. There's like, depending on which narrator you're listening to, like the narrator that kind of interrupts in the second playthrough very much seems to be the house. And you play a lot of this game realizing the house is angry at you. But like there's also the reason it is angry at you is because like you've inflicted some amount of pain through neglect on the house. And like you can read this as like that's the house's anger and agony. Like that's the pain. And it doesn't go away because like there's no, you don't, what is that game, Home Flipper or whatever, or Power Wash Simulator? Like you never fix the house. And so the screaming never stops because the house is just like, it's going to kill you and it's still going to be fucking upset and it's still going to be neglected. That like, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too far into it at that point, but like it is clearly if that is the narrator being the house, like, that is its anguish you are listening to, and it's never ending.
Yeah, I think, like, it gets in some of the other dialogue also, like, is there an actual way to make the house happy? Because it's like, there's the sense that maybe, like,
right,
it just outlives everyone that's ever been there, and so, like, it, and it can't communicate with them, it can't, like, form relationships. It, you know, it's the like, I have no mouth and I must scream kind of thing.
And then there's the scream. Yeah.
But this is, like, a real concept, right? Like, I mean, famous haunted houses or whatever, like the Amityville house or the Conjuring houses, all of these are, like, you know, the, most people do not want to move into a place that is quote unquote haunted or where a murder happens. In Japan, famously, you can get crazy, like, rent decreases by moving into a place where a death happened, because people don't want to inhabit these. And so, like, yeah, what, there's no solution for the house because the next owner, whatever happened there, will be scared. People won't want to live here again. The house will just continue to suffer because no one will love it after whatever bad thing happened within it. You can't build a home in the Amityville house. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't move into that shit. Are you, you're out
That's
of your mind.
Right.
I'm sure a lovely family lives there now and it's totally fine.
Listeners, check who lives in the Amityville house.
There, it's not even that far from me. I'm pretty sure it's, like, in Long Island.
Yeah, you take the Long Island River out there. Less than an hour.
AJ, you want to go? I don't even think he's home right now.
Yeah, so there's there's a lot that happens in this third. The third is kind of the most abstracted, where it's like, yeah, we have that scream, we have the house breaking. A lot of the tapes are, like, nothing at this point. Like, they don't even contain kind of, like, recognizable words or whatever. Except for sometimes it will do that thing where it actually plays, like, very clearly the tape from the beginning, and it, like, it hasn't changed the dialogue, but, like, you are just living with so much knowledge of, like, how evil this house is or how much the house hates you that, like, hearing the same words are suddenly, like, way more scary. And the idea of, like, why is this not garbled, you know, why am I able to understand this, is there anything specific to talk about in this one before we go down into the basement? There's the TV, actually, which is notable, which is, if you turn on the TV in this run instead of the blue light that was in the second, it's red and it makes a scary noise. And and it says on there, you never came back, which is, you know, again, the perspective of the house becoming more and more clear. But then eventually, you walk down into the basement, and the house talks to you specifically, like you, the kind of invader. There's a line that I love where it says, what is it? It's, there's a difference between dissection and vivisection, a difference that appears to be lost on you, which is, vivisection is while the thing is still alive, notably.
Oh, well, it's alive, right? It's just you leave the organs intact. Dissection is pulling the organs out. Vivisection is you pull back and leave everything intact. I don't think it has to be alive.
Google tells me vivisection is the practice of performing operations on live animals for the purpose of experimentation.
I'm sorry. I tried to mansplain and I got what was coming to me on that one.
I mean, I did not... I was not sure of that definition before I, like, looked it up because of this game. But I think it's like, in the non-serial killer sense, it's like, hey, you can kind of look at how, like, a heart, you know, like cows, you can, like, look inside their stomach while they're still alive. Like, there are kind of scientific purposes for this. Anyway, it says, you know, when a house is both hungry and awake, every room becomes a mouth. And then actual teeth come out of the ceiling and up through the floor of the basement, and that's where the third one ends. There is something that I want to bring up, which actually was only published in April of 2023, but it's a paper in the Journal of Communication, Culture, and Critique by Christine Prevas, called Unlocked Doors, The Trans Glitch in Kitty Horror Show's Anatomy. And there have been, you know, Kitty Horror Show herself is trans. There have been kind of queer readings of this game before. I don't want to to TLDR Christine's article too much because it is very like long and involved. But I do, you know, they have lines just like, the house is a vexed space for queer and trans studies. After the delivery room is the first site of compulsory gendering, the space of pink and blue baby clothes, of baby dolls and construction toys, and talks about kind of the game glitching, allowing for the kind of like they actually reference there is kind of a history of writing about glitches as a sort of like version of queer expression to kind of like create space in between the predicted things or whatever. And so it's just like, it's a really interesting take on this game that is like, you know, I've seen people in the past kind of just reference that Anatomy is a very trans game, but without the sort of like detailed reading that this is going into. And so you do need like an institutional login to read this thing, but it's a good article and I recommend it. Anyway, when you start the fourth one, you're not in the house. This is where the game kind of goes nutty, or depends, like, you know, defies what you think it is going to be, because there are actually a couple different variations on what this level can be. It's not the same every time, but like when you reboot the game for the fourth time, you are somewhere else. You are like it kind of in an outside space, and you wander around for a while and then find the house from the outside.
Okay, so explain the variations, because for me, I just walked in a single file, then the house showed up, and that was that. I couldn't turn or move. But then when I watched your video, I saw you had a gameplay clip of something I like appearing like this, that like I had no clue what was. So like, what are the variations?
It's like, I'm
also, Autumn, what was your experience?
Yeah, go ahead.
If there are multiple different things you can get
through. Mine was like floating platforms in an undescript void space with like lights and stuff shining around. And just like, you could see that it seems to go on endlessly. Just walk any direction. There's no clear objective to walk towards.
Yeah, it's really interesting how different they can be, because there's one that has, like, if you look at the Markiplier playthrough on YouTube, where it's just like lines and lines of houses, and there's like a giant one at the end, which is kind of like a, you know, it looks like a scary suburb. The one that I had was basically, you were like on roads and there was like nothing. And then as you kind of like went down this like series of roads, there were kind of like more structural looking things. And then there was like one house that you had to like walk off of the road and up to the front door. But it's like, it's interesting that this is not really an element of the game that I've like seen talked about, but there are like a number of variations of what it can be, which is just a really neat
thing. Yeah, I had no clue about any of that. Like, this is the first I'm hearing about it. I'm looking at Markipliers, which I do frequently, watch Markiplier videos in my free time. Okay, Markiplier had the one I had. That's what it was. Like, you can't move. You just kind of have to, like, walk down the street.
I wonder if, like, the game, so the game functions, like, when you reach the end, it says you can hit delete, and it will clear your save, and then you can, like, start from the beginning again. But I wonder if there is a little thing that keeps track of you doing it, where actually your first playthrough, you'll always get that one, and then maybe you'll get different ones later on. But though, Autumn, you said you got something else. So I don't know how it decides what you get.
Jacob, you've played it multiple times, right? Like, it was different for you. Or do you think it's just random?
I think my guess is it's just kind of random. I mean, one time, I think I was, like, by a lake, which is another very weird thing. Yeah, it's interesting. But anyway, then you get back to the house, and the game gives you like the last bit of it, which is you're just in the basement and you can't move. And you're just looking at a tape player.
It looks, your perspective is that you're on the floor on your side.
yeah, it looks, you know, you're, maybe you are the person who was knocked down the basement stairs or whatever.
The whole ending monologue, though, here is the, like, what happens to a house when it's left alone thing.
Yeah, so this, I think this is the most direct Haunting of Hill House DNA in the game, is that this, so the monologue in Anatomy is, you know, what happens to a house when it's left alone, what does it think of, what does it dream, I'm skipping here, but it may grow lonesome, it may stare for long hours into the emptiness of its dark halls, and basically it is talking about, like, the house becoming lonely and angry and bitter and kind of, like, turning on itself. I do want to read, this is, like, a famous quote, but the first paragraph of Haunting of Hill House is, "No live organism can continue for long to exist sanely under conditions of absolute reality. Even larks and katydids are supposed by some to dream. Hill House, not sane, stood by itself against the hills, holding darkness within it. It had stood so for 80 years and might stand for 80 more. Within, walls continued upright, bricks met neatly, floors were firm, and doors were sensibly shut. Silence lay steadily against the wood and stone of Hill House, and whatever walked there walked alone." Which is a fucking home run of an opening paragraph, but also it is, like, it is this idea of, like, the house as an object that contains emotions and, like, is affected by its environment. And I do think it's a shame that it is so hard to understand this last monologue, because I do think it's kind of the game's thesis.
No comments for me. I didn't hear it. I couldn't understand what was being said. You tell me, y'all. What was the thesis?
I mean, I think, like, it's around what we've been talking about. Like, what does it do, feel? How does it, like, emotionally interact with the inhabitants of it? And I think you get signs of, like, loneliness and hunger, and the age to it also, that it has seen this and it knows people are either going to move out again or die and, like, new people are going to come, but the house also doesn't understand that's happening. You can start to think about,
yeah, I think what it's really, you know, it is really just asking you to think about, like, your relationship with a house as a two-way relationship, you know, that it affects you and you affect it, and, like, even after you are gone, there is some echo of, like, you that stays in there, which can be, you know, like, a very kind of nice thing to think about, but also it can get haunted real quick. And I think the idea of, like, any haunted house just being, like, the echo of its previous inhabitants, this is explaining kind of why that might be, you know, and it's because the house is holding on to the feeling of people being inside it, even though there aren't people inside it anymore.
Final question. Y'all believe in haunted houses? Y'all believe in ghosts?
Yeah, I think I believe in haunted houses more than ghosts. You know, which doesn't quite make sense, because it's like, well, then what are they haunted by? But, like, the idea of a house being, you know, it's like, I can't explain why I find it scary to be in, like, a house in the dark alone. But it's not because I think, like, a dead person is going to appear and scare me, you know? So it's like, there is just some fear that I have attached to the house itself. Separate from ghosts.
Yeah, and I think, like, that becomes apparent here also, in the sense that, like, this is not some old creaky Victorian or Gothic house. It looks like it was made in the 70s somewhere in America. Very non-placey.
I choose to believe in ghosts because it makes me less scared of dying, which is my primary fear, is dying. I'm like, well, if ghosts are real, then there's nothing to worry about. I'll just be a cool ghost. Call my ass Casper.
Call your ass Matt Lease. Cool Ghosts, the YouTube channel. That was what I started.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Everyone remember good. At the beginning of that's the podcast when I said that thing?
That's a great way to end it, Jacob. Thanks for listening to Something Rotten. I've been Jacob. He's been Blake. Autumn, thanks for being here. Bye.
For me, you know, it's like it is hard for me to not talk hyperbolically about this thing. And we already have. But it's like, this game is for me the kind of rare thing of, like, a perfect horror object. You know, it almost feels like, you know those, have you ever seen those videos on YouTube where someone's like, I cooked the purest cookie, and it's like, you can get, like, chemically perfect flour that is like, it is like completely untouched by any other thing. And it's just like, this is pure flower. You know, this is the purest they can get. For me, this is like, there is kind of nothing that you could do to this to make it a better horror experience than it is. It feels almost kind of like primeval in that it's just like it exists. It's hard for me to think about someone developing this game, you know, because it feels so just kind of like controlled by itself, you know. It's one of my favorite games ever.
Yeah, I think like it has a certain effect that you get from like short stories in fiction, where there's a quality to just how concise it is.
Blake, did you have you can say no, I won't be disappointed. Do you have trouble sleeping after you play this?
Oh yeah, a little bit. I live above a hookah bar. I almost said the name of the place. I live above a hookah bar. I called 2 noise complaints on them yesterday. So yeah, I did have trouble sleeping that night.
Autumn, related to anatomy, did this game did it stick around in your head?
Well, actually, I also had trouble sleeping for completely new work reasons. which is, it just got really cold in the city, so yeah, all the mice moved into
oh, God.
Yeah.
Another reason a place yeah, can be alive. It's filled with mice.
There's actually something I do just want to touch on yeah, quickly, though, about this, like, ending monologue thing and, like, some stuff that's just been said where, like, for me, I guess at the time I am playing it, it does make me think more about my own body, too. I feel kind of weird doing this, but I just like wrote this like strain of conscious
oh, please
thought
do. Yeah,
out after playing it.
Yep.
What do I do with the feeling that my body is a house that is rejecting me? That every morning I wake up and it gnaws at me from the inside. Human microbiome, cancer, dysphoria, all existential challenges to the house as my own to live in. The house that was, of course, never really mine, never belonged to this generation that's dying younger of illness caused by stress and pollution and lack of access to healthcare. But the house won't forgive me for my parents' sins. We're all just renters in this body.
I'm giving a clap. Discord's not picking it up.
A stream of conscience better than anything I've ever read. So that was great.
Autumn, thank you so much for coming on Something Rotten. I do. I you know, we talked about your Miyazaki writing at the beginning of this, but the articles that you wrote for or the one that you wrote for Bullet Points on Armored Core specifically, I really loved, and I recommend that other people check that out.
Yeah, it was great to be on here and talk to you.
Anything else that you wanna plug that Joe Hisaishi interview should be out?
Yeah, yeah,
by
Paste
now?
Magazine. Go check that out. That week also gonna have an interview out with the developers of Highland Song. So yeah, you can find all that on my social internet lifeboats. That's like at the Autumn Rate on Twitter and Blue Sky, and at Autumn on Co-host. You can also keep up with my writing at Unwinnable, monthly indie games critic magazine that y'all should subscribe to if you don't know about yet.
Yeah, all these freaking new subscription game sites, subscribe to Unwinnable. They've been doing stuff for years.
Been doing the thing for over a decade.
People like to forget about Unwinnable, but that's your first mistake.
Never forget about Unwinnable.
I AJ and me... I found my physical quarantine. Autumn, did you write for that?
I have a terrible poem in there, yeah.
I have a haiku in it, of all things, yeah. We found that it's like on the centerpiece of our entire apartment is the quarantine. So we stay love and Unwinnable
awesome.
in this house and in the Something Rotten internet house.
Okay, and look, for Blake Hester, my name is Jacob Geller. This has been Something Rotten, and Blake, I just want to sincerely apologize for making you play this game. And our next couple games will not be as scary.
Hey, here's the thing. Your ass is going to have to play Nier Automata soon, so everything's coming up.
That's not confirmed.
It literally is. We confirmed it 2 episodes ago. Please remember what you say on this
okay,
podcast.
But that's just at some point in the future. All right, we're done.